Oh,
oye, oye, oye.
Hi, Dr. Otello.
Hi, Nia.
So we've talked about the Olmstead case, and you mentioned that Brandeis had a dissent that was a basis for later decisions. I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit more about that, when and how that happened.
That is a great question, and we will need to time warp from 1928 to 1967.
Okay, so we get in our DeLorean and our Back to the Future move, and off we'll go. What was happening?
So lots of things, but the most important in the legal world is that we have Earl Warren as the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and he led the court through the Due Process Revolution.
What is the Due Process Revolution?
It refers to several court decisions that were incorporating due process rights to state actions through the 14th Amendment. So they are incorporating what were restrictions on the federal government now down to state governments.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
And the case in this one is Cats v. U.S.
Cats as in the terrible musical or
no.
A different kind of cats?
A different kind of cats.
Okay. Can you give me a spelling on it?
K-A-T-Z.
Okay. And who was this Cats person?
So, Charles Katz was one of the preeminent basketball handicappers in the country at the time.
A handicapper?
A handicapper is the person who predicts the results of a competition, such as for the purposes of betting against the point spread.
A bookie. Oh, I didn't realize they had a name. Okay.
Well, and he's the person who sets that. So he's going to say.
Oh, the odds are bloody blah da bloody yes. Blah, like when you go to the racetrack.
Yes.
So, and each horse has a 4-to-1 chance of winning. He's that guy.
Yes, but he does this for basketball. So let's say the Rams are poised to beat the Spiders by a spread of 8 points. But let's say that the Rams still win, but they only win by 6 points. And you bet on the Rams because you are a good VCU person.
Heck yeah.
But you still lose because the Rams didn't beat the point spread.
Okay.
He's the man who sets the point spread.
Oh, okay. And that's a problem. Why?
Because at this time, gambling on sports events was illegal.
Okay. That would be a problem. Okay.
And especially at the federal level when they're crossing state lines.
Okay.
And Charles Katz is in L.A., and he is calling his buddies in Boston and Miami to be setting those. So... And what ended up happening is the FBI, acting on a suspicion, placed a wiretap on top of a public phone booth on the outside where Katz was using the phone, and they did this without a warrant.
So he wasn't even doing this in his office or in his house. He was going to a phone booth. For those that don't know, a phone booth is a box surrounded by glass, but people can see you. You're mm-hmm. out in public, and you would make a phone call inside said very, very small space.
Yes.
But they were public. They were in public places. They were in bars and restaurants and malls and hotels and everything else. Because, of course, people didn't have their own personal phones. Some people didn't even have their own personal phones in their homes at that point.
Exactly.
Okay, so it was okay for them to do that according to Olmstead, though, right? Because they're on the outside of the booth and they're not in his property.
Well, yes, they're not on the inside, so they have not invaded the property
gotcha.
To get it, which is exactly right.
So what was he charged with?
So he was charged with conducting illegal gambling operations across state lines. And... he was placing bets to Boston and Miami, which is how it becomes a federal case.
Okay, very across state lines, across country.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what happens to him?
He was convicted at trial.
Well, I would imagine those tapes probably helped.
Yeah, I imagine that they did. But Katz and his lawyers were not done. They appealed to the Ninth Circuit.
What did the Ninth Circuit Court do?
They upheld the conviction based on the Olmstead ruling. But Katz and his lawyers were still not done, and they appealed it to the Supreme Court.
Okay. So, first of all, they get over the hump of the court agrees to hear this case?
Yes.
Okay.
They did that in 1967.
And what did they decide?
In a 7-1 decision.
Well, wait. 7-1?
7-1.
That math does not add up. There are 9 justices.
You're right.
Did they gag a justice? Did they stuff a justice in a closet? Oh, no. Was there a dead justice? Oh, that's always sad.
No, there was not a dead justice. There was a new justice, Thurgood Marshall.
Oh.
However, and...
Because he's awesome.
And he recused himself from this case because as the previous Solicitor General, he had authored the U.S. government's brief in opposition to Katz prior to him sitting on the Supreme Court. So he didn't want to have any appearance of impropriety of he may have influenced the decision of the court.
Hey, he's a stand-up dude.
Very stand-up guy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So let me make just a brief, I have a brief question here. So it can take so long for your case to get through the court system that the guy who authored the, like, we have to go after this person can then be a Supreme Court justice by the time you get there?
Well,
I mean, that's happened in other cases, right? With people who were solicitor generals as, or attorneys generals as, I don't know what the plurals are on those. Sorry.
Well, you may have heard other cases on it. So they may have briefed other things. So they were involved in the briefing of the case. Okay. At some point. But also, you have to remember at this time, appointing Supreme Court justices was not as controversial as it is now.
Oh, so it didn't take as long?
It didn't take as long.
Okay. All right. So what did the court decide?
So they decided to abandon the Olmstead approach entirely, and they reversed the conviction.
What? Okay. So based on what? They can do that?
They can do that. And while it's supposed to be unusual, it does happen because of changes in our society. And in this case, that is exactly what happened.
Okay, so how'd the court explain their overturning thing? I know that's not really a term. Sorry.
Reversal.
Thank you. Their reversal.
So they held that the Fourth Amendment protections follow the person and not the place. So instead of looking at whether the government intruded on personal property like they did in Olmstead, they're looking at the person.
Okay, so how does the court find that Katz's Fourth Amendment rights were violated when you could clearly see him in a public phone booth? Like, phone booths are made of glass, as I think I mentioned. Like, they're you're not invisible when you're in a phone booth unless you're in Get Smart. Every other person who's in a phone booth, or Superman, because apparently Superman can go in them, get naked, and then come out as Superman and not be seen. But other than those two instances.
So that's a great question. And one Justice Stewart addressed directly. He said that Katz went into the booth to block an uninvited ear, not an intruding eye. So Katz was entitled to privacy in the public booth in the same way as one would be in a friend's office or in a taxi cab. One occupies it, shuts the door behind him, and pays the toll that permits him to place a call. To broadcast his words around the world would ignore the vital role public telephone play in public communications.
That is a huge shift.
Huge shift. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
In about 40 years, not quite 40 years, but in that time.
This is why you lawyer types always say, watch the dissents.
Yes.
Because the dissents sometimes will change law later.
Yes.
So this is how Brandeis is affecting the law going forward. 40 years, I mean, I assume Brandeis at this point has passed on to the great court in the sky.
I don't remember when he passed, but that's a good assumption.
And yet, okay.
Yes. So The major impact from this case, though, didn't come from the majority or the dissent, but rather Justice John Marshall Harlan's concurrence.
What's a concurrence?
A concurrence is when a justice agrees with the decision of the majority, but disagrees with their reasoning. So they write their own opinion to set out the correct reasoning.
Really? So, like, you got it right, but you didn't get it right for the right reasons?
Yes. It's like showing your math.
A proof. You have to, I see, mm-hmm. You can't just get to the answer. You have to get to the answer in the right way.
Exactly.
Okay. So what did he want to correct?
So Harlan focused his on the idea of whether one has a reasonable expectation of Fourth Amendment protections.
So this is where the saying reasonable expectation of privacy gets started.
Exactly.
Okay. So and like if you're standing in an airport and you're shouting, I am a criminal and I do criminal things and I have cocaine in my wallet, you don't really have an expectation of privacy.
No, you do not.
Okay. So this is where that starts to be, mm-hmm. if you're out in public, you have to assume that you're mm-hmm. fully out in public.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it continues this at reasonable expectation of privacy, whether you have one or not. It continues as part of our conversation today about government intrusion. And his standard about whether you have an expectation of privacy endures.
Okay. So what happens next?
So what happens to Katz is the court has reversed the conviction and Katz leaves the court as a free man.
Woo! I'm sure he's happy.
Well, not so much, actually.
Oh, no.
His lawyer reported that Katz asked him if he could now sue the FBI over illegal tapping his conversation. His lawyer said no, and Katz walked away. But that's not the end of the impact of this case.
Oh, really? So what happened?
Congress, the next year, passed the Omnibus Crime Control and Safe Streets Act of 1968. And one of the major provisions in this law requires police to get wiretaps, to get warrants for their wiretaps.
So in the end, Katz did get what he wanted. I mean, he didn't get to sue, but he at least got... Okay, so how did this keep police from tapping phones then?
Not at all.
Did Katz eventually get... Okay.
Not at all. But the thing is now they're getting warrants. In 2016, 3,168 wiretaps were authorized by judges. So the police are still listening into conversations, but now we have some procedural safeguards in place.
I have to say... I like that. I mean, I like that someone has to ask someone. You can't just go around listening because that seems creepy. So go Katz. I mean, not really because he's a criminal, but you know what I mean. I have mixed mm-hmm. feelings about Mr. Katz, as I have mixed feelings about Katz in general, C's and K's. Okay, so before we stop, can you brief the case for me?
Certainly. Federal agents attached an eavesdropping device to the outside of a public phone booth used by Katz, who was phoning to clients about gambling information. Based on these recordings, Katz was convicted for illegal transmission of wagering information from Los Angeles to Boston and Miami. On appeal, Katz challenged his conviction, arguing that the recordings violated his Fourth Amendment rights and should not be used against him. The Court of Appeals rejected this point, noting the absence of a physical intrusion into the phone booth itself. At issue, does the Fourth Amendment protection against unreasonable searches and seizures require the police to obtain a search warrant in order to wiretap a public payphone? The court held that Katz was entitled to Fourth Amendment protection for his conversations and that a physical intrusion into the area he occupied was unnecessary to bring the amendment into play. The Fourth Amendment protects people, not places, Justice Stewart says. John Harlan Marshall introduced the idea of a reasonable expectation of Fourth Amendment protection. This case has been the basis for modern application of Fourth Amendment rights. Oh, I'm sorry.